Radio Prague News. 6 people have been killed and several injured in a bus accident on the D8 motorway near Prague. Social Democrat and Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has said his party will take a tougher stance in negotiations with the parties of the emerging coalition government. And a building just 100 meters from Prague's Wenceslas Square collapsed on Sunday morning, but no one was hurt. Six people were killed and several injured in a bus accident on the D8 motorway near the town of Zdiby, close to Prague, on Sunday morning. The police are still investigating the cause of the accident, but firefighters suspect the driver of the bus fell asleep behind the wheel. The bus drove into a crash barrier, hit a bridge, and then rolled over into a ditch. In a separate coach accident in Upper Austria, 14 people were injured, but luckily no one was killed. The coach carrying Czech tourists returning from a trip to Italy crashed in the town of Freistadt on Saturday night. Part of a building that was under renovation in the center of Prague collapsed on Sunday morning, but no one was hurt. The Cubist building, used to house the popular Umishaka cafe, and is located on Prague's Vodíčková street, just 100 meters from the frequented Mustek metro station and Wenceslas Square. Emergency workers looked through the rubble with the help of search dogs, and it appears no one was at the site when the building collapsed. The outgoing Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has said his Social Democrats will take a tougher stance in the negotiations with the emerging centre-right coalition of the Civic Democrats, the Christian Democrats and the Greens. He labelled the three-party coalition as an unviable project and again called for the establishment of a caretaker government as a way out of the post-election deadlock. President Václav Klaus expects Civic Democrat chairman Mirek Topolánek to report to him on the state of the coalition talks by the first week of August. On Thursday and Friday, President Klaus held separate meetings with the heads of all parties in Parliament. Last month, Mr. Klaus authorized Mr. Topolánek, whose party received the largest share of the votes, to launch talks on a new governing coalition. However, the negotiations have produced no concrete result, as both the right and the left have 100 deputies in the 200-member lower house after the June parliamentary elections. A group of Czech citizens who've decided to leave Lebanon amid escalating clashes between Lebanon's Hezbollah movement and Israeli forces are back in the Czech Republic. The 12 people arrived in Prague on Sunday morning. On Friday, the Czech Foreign Ministry recommended Czech citizens leave Lebanon and asked them to contact the Czech embassy in Beirut. Around 150 of the 200 estimated Czechs in the country are permanent residents. The new Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico has arrived in the Czech Republic for his first official foreign visit since becoming Prime Minister. Mr. Fico met Czech President Václav Klaus at Prague Castle and also his Czech counterpart Jiří Paroubek. Among the topics discussed were Czech-Slovak relations and also cooperation in approaching the traditional foreign markets of the former Czechoslovakia, which split up in 1993. The Czech Foreign Ministry has joined the EU's criticism of the court verdict that sent Belarusian opposition leader Alexander Konzulin, a presidential candidate in this year's election, to prison, the ministry said in a statement on Friday. Mr. Konzulin was sentenced to 5.5 years in prison for organizing protest rallies against the re-election of Alexander Lukashenko as Belarusian president. The Czech Foreign Ministry said the decision could be viewed as another step in a series of politically motivated repressions against the opponents of the current Belarusian regime. And a quick look at the weather. The next few days should be sunny, with daytime highs between 22 and 27 degrees Celsius. I'm Lisa Asiedu, and that's the end of the news. You're tuned to the International Service of Czech Radio. And up next on Radio Prague, Pavla Horáková is back and will be answering some of your questions in mailbox. Daniela Lazarová has written a letter from Prague on how Czechs can't seem to cope with the heat wave, and it's also time for another edition of Czech Books, in which David Vaughan features Elizabeth Jane Weston, an English woman at the court of Rudolf II.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox. Thank you very much for all those letters and emails we've received from you over the past week. Today we'll start with this one sent in by Theodor Shepetitsky from Ottawa, Canada.
In Canada, as elsewhere in North America, marathons are being run everywhere. In the 1952 Olympic Games, a remarkable Czech by the name of Emil Zátopek captured the 5 kilometre, the 10 kilometre and the marathon, all in record times. I don't believe this feat has ever been duplicated. This led me to think that if there was any country where a marathon was named after a famous runner, such as Emil Zátopek, it might be in the Czech Republic. This assumes that marathons or similar long-distance races are popular in the Czech Republic.
Well, the major marathon event in the Czech Republic is the Prague International Marathon, which has been taking place every year since 1995, when 1,500 runners participated in it. This year, over 4,000 runners from 60 countries took part. Strange though it may seem, no major such event has been named after Emil Zátopek in this country. In June, we broadcast an interview with Girolamo Giomani, who's fighting for the rights of property owners in the Czech Republic. In response to that program, we got this email from Mark Coviello from the United States.
I sympathize with Mr. Giomani. Of course, he wants to make a profit on his apartment buildings. He thought the winds of change would come sooner for him. Who makes money in real estate in the Czech Republic? Here in the US, we know real estate will eventually reap a profit. You can't kick out a little old lady, but you should be able to destabilize the subsequent rents of their forebears. Good luck to him and all the others pursuing the capitalistic dream.
From Business to Science, and Mukesh Tekwani from India heard our report on a project trying to attract more young people to pursue scientific careers.
Your item on science in the streets, persuading young people to study science, was interesting. It's sad to know that science education has suffered all over, including in Europe, which is generally considered as the cradle of science. I would be interested in getting in touch with individuals, organizations, or colleges involved in science popularization. I would also be very much delighted to exchange information with like-minded individuals in other places to do our bit for science popularization. By the way, I'm a physics professor here in India.
And from the other side of the globe, Chris Krug from the United States has sent us this brief note.
I just wanted to drop you a note to tell you how much I enjoy your programming. This afternoon I tuned into your broadcast on 11600 kHz. I found your story on Czech filmmakers and your interview with the foreign minister very interesting. I've been a shortwave listener for 20 years, and your station has always been one of my favorites. I especially enjoy your jazz music programs. I hope you continue to broadcast on shortwave for years to come. You really do have a dedicated following over here in the US.
And James Garvin from Northern Ireland is another shortwave enthusiast.
I used to listen to Radio Prague in the late 60s, 70s and possibly 80s, particularly the DX program, which I see is now dropped. What became of the announcer, Petr Skála? Is he still alive and where does he live? Recently I've come back to the shortwave hobby and still treasure your QSL card, which I received in 1969.
I must say that I only found out about the mysterious presenter Petr Skála about a month ago. He is, in fact, our shortwave expert Oldřich, or Olda Cheap, whom I quote quite often here in Mailbox, and who answers your queries concerning reception, transmitters and the like. He used the pseudonym back then because his real name on the air would have been too difficult for an untrained ear. Olda is very well and still busy working in Czech radio. 2 weeks ago in Mailbox, David Vaughan announced the winners of Radio Prague's annual competition. In response to that, we got this email from our regular listener Mary Lou Krennick from Texas in the United States.
It was a pleasant surprise to see who was the winner of the 2006 Radio Prague competition. Dmitry Balikin from Russia wrote a wonderful, objective summary of the Prague uprising in 1945. He really expressed his thoughts and the truth of the situation very well. His comments for the subway and the clock were probably as equally well written. If you can, publish them for us to read. And I'm very happy he's from Russia. He elevated the historical situation to the high plane of thought, giving everyone involved some due credit. He should be a diplomat. Whenever the winners of the yearly competitions are chosen, my admiration is quite high for the winners, for they truly deserve the prizes. You do a great job in selecting the winners.
Actually, you will have a chance to hear some of the runner-up entries in our future programs as we plan to read out excerpts from them. The full essay by Mr. Balikin, translated into English, as well as the list of the runners-up, can be seen on our website. And before I go, here's our monthly competition question. If you follow Radio Prague regularly, you will find this question quite easy. We'd like you to tell us the name of a Czech-born American anthropologist who was one of the first scientists to pronounce a theory that all humans are the descendants of one common ancestor. You have until the end of July to send us your answers to Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or much quicker, to english@radio.cz. Till next week. Bye-bye and thanks for listening.
And if you tune in at the same time next week, there'll be more reaction to your questions and comments from Pavla. But now, Daniela Lazarová's in the studio with her letter from Prague.
Prague is wilting. Although summer is short and precious in this part of the world, the present heat wave with temperatures around 33 degrees Celsius appears to be more than most people can cope with. There's been a mass exodus from the city to country cottages. The embankments of the Vltava River are crowded with swimmers, and breweries are working overtime to meet demand. People on trams and buses complain about the heat and give each other advice on how to best survive a day at the office. Those who work in offices without air conditioning get water supplies for free. Bankers are taking off their suits and people in uniform are complaining that it is almost impossible to get through the day. Judges are said to be fainting in their robes and TV anchors admit that under the news desk they are wearing shorts and have got their feet stuck in a basin of cold water. A considerable part of the primetime evening news is devoted to reports about people collapsing from dehydration, the sales boom in electric fans and air conditioners, and interviews with meteorologists about whether this kind of weather is normal and for how long it may be expected to last. According to latest reports, even animals at the zoo are taking the heat badly. One of the elephants has refused to come out into her open enclosure for 3 days, a sure sign that things are not looking good. The eyes of the nation are on the country's meteorologists, and the weather forecast is as closely watched as the coalition talks which should produce the next government. And just as there is no sign of a government on the horizon, there appears to be no sign of cooler weather. Meteorologists have monitored the weather since 1775, and a forecast based on a comparative study suggests that we're in for another month of tropical heat. I'm in the minority here, so I have to say this quietly, things just couldn't be better.
Well, luckily, Daniela and I sit in the same office because I couldn't agree with her more. And now it's time for me to say goodbye and hand the mic over to David Vaughan, who introduces you to the works of Elizabeth Jane Weston, an Englishwoman who wrote poetry in the Czech lands several hundred years ago.
At the Star Czech Books, here's something from our recent archives.
Thousands have been evacuated all over the country. Prague has been hit by a wave of flooding that is the worst in over a century.
Yes, it's the great floods of August 2002. Now, these may have been the worst floods for a century, but they certainly weren't the first to hit the Czech capital. Here is a poetic description of a similar disaster way back in 1596.
The sky's inclemency stirs up the angry winds. The watery clouds are soaking with ceaseless rain. The turbulent Vltava, swollen with rainy waves, bursting, impetuous, breaks through its river banks.
If you remember 2002, all this sounds very familiar. But for a number of reasons, these verses, going back over 400 years, are unusual. To start with, the poet who witnessed this Central European catastrophe was English. Secondly, she was a woman, at a time when education for women was more often than not completely neglected. And thirdly, she was still only in her teens, and was writing in perfect and beautifully crafted Latin verse. The poet's name was Elizabeth Jane Weston, the English maiden in the court of King and Emperor Rudolf II, and known by many of her contemporaries simply as Westonia. To find out more about her story, we start in the British Library in London, where Susan Reynolds is curator of Czech and Slovak literature. Her interest in Westonia began when she found out that the library housed an original edition of a collection of her writings.
In this, she inscribed her own name in 1610, describing herself as Elizabeth Jane, wife of Johannes Leo, agent in the imperial court and Englishwoman of the Western family, so she never lost her English identity. And I was able to see and handle this book for myself. I'd found out about her in my general studies of this period of Czech literature and literature at Rudolf's court. And when I knew that we actually had a book signed by the author herself in our collections, I was moved to go and seek it out. And when I read how extensive and how varied and diverting her works were, I simply couldn't resist finding out more about her, especially because my time I have written Latin verse myself, I know how challenging this is. And I felt a great sense of comradeship with, you might say, and I wish I could have met her.
The Prague of Rudolf II at the end of the 16th century must have been an intriguing place to be. The King of Bohemia and Holy Roman Emperor was a man of culture and of eclectic tastes. His court was a babel of different languages and a place of rich cultural cross-fertilization. But how did a teenage girl from rural Oxfordshire come to find herself in the midst of all this opulence? According to the records of the parish of Chipping Norton, Elizabeth Jane Weston was born in 1582. The records confirm that her father died when she was less than a year old, and it was her mother's second husband, the Irishman Edward Kelly, who provided the link with Prague. Kelly was known for his education and his knowledge of alchemy and the occult. This drew the attention of the Emperor Rudolf.
He was, as most people know, fascinated in alchemy, in the supernatural. He was a highly superstitious man by modern standards. And as well as wanting to find out the origins of the Philosopher's Stone, the Elixir of Life, and so on, he was also very keen on surrounding himself with those who could foretell the future. And Kelly was appointed as scryer, that is, a man who divines the future by looking into a crystal ball or similar reflective surfaces. And shortly after his marriage, which Edward Kelly claimed to be instigated by the Archangel Michael himself, he and his wife went off, leaving the two young children in the care of their grandmothers in Oxfordshire. But when these grandmothers both died, they collected young John Francis and Elizabeth and took them out to Prague. Now, in view of the bad press that so many stepfathers have nowadays, it's worth remarking here that one could not fault Edward Kelly as a family man. In fact, Elizabeth says that she loved him and he loved her like a second father, and he went to the trouble of engaging a tutor from Cambridge who gave both the two children a marvellous education. Elizabeth, so many contemporaries assert, was fluent in Czech, English, German, Italian and Latin, and this by her mid-teens. Cromwell, for example, the young Elizabeth I, and this at a time when contemporary sources state that for a girl to be educated at this level was not just useless but actually shameful, so clearly he was far ahead of his times.
So Elizabeth, as an obviously very bright and receptive child, was growing up in a richly stimulating cultural environment. This was not to last. In 1591, Edward Kelly fell out of favour with the Emperor. It said that Kelly had rather rashly killed one of Rudolf's courtiers.
Not surprisingly, the emperor was none too pleased and had him imprisoned, first of all in the fortress of Klivklat, and then later on he was brought to Prague. And exactly when and how he died is rather obscure. One account is that, and this sounds suspiciously familiar, he was killed trying to escape. Another is that he experimented with elixir of life for the emperor, was told to try it on himself and did not survive the attempt. However, he died sometime towards the end of the 16th century, and this meant a disaster for his wife and stepchildren. The son was now studying in Ingolstadt in the university there. He was in poor health. He died in 1600, and this left just two of the family, Elizabeth and her mother. And the bailiffs were distraining on the family's property, including her mother's dowry, to which she had no right. And in despair, Elizabeth was extremely resourceful, set about writing impassioned appeals in Latin verse to influential patrons and appealing for their help. She even addressed one to the emperor himself. And this appears to have been successful. One of the points she made was that she was in exile. She was a desolate English maiden in a foreign country. If her property was seized, her chances of making any sort of marriage at all would be almost nil, because she would have no dowry. And yet, in spite of that, she seems to have saved the family fortunes and kept them above water in a way remarkable for a girl not yet out of her teens.
And how did she manage that?
Well, for one thing, she was brought into the circle of the Silesian poet Georg Martinius von Balthoven, who was 3 years older than she was, and he encouraged her to publish her verses. He also interceded tirelessly on her behalf, and in 1602 he brought out the first collection of her poemata in two volumes, and 6 years later this was followed by a second, and this was known as Parthenikon Libri Tres, literally three volumes of a maiden's writings.
And she was writing entirely in Latin. You said that she spoke all these different languages. Why was she writing in Latin?
Well, quite simply, Latin was the best way of reaching a wide international audience, because to have written in Czech at that time would have limited her prospects of increasing her readership. Latin was not only the language of religion and learning, but also of international diplomacy. And when we look at the people to whom she wrote these Latin poems, they include not only English, French, Czechs, but also a Dutchman. So it was a lingua franca, and as such enabled her to increase her appeal to many different readers.
Christ, rest the hope vouchsafed to me, but give me your aid, lest these evils should swamp my soul. I put my trust in no images, no human art. The sure salvation I hope for, no man provides. You are my hope, my concern, you are mine. Through the rocks, through the fire and rough seas I will follow, if you command, if you wish. I will triumph through trust, my petitions assured. Either here or above, in the house of your Father Supreme.
One of the people to whom Elizabeth had turned during her attempts to save her family's fortunes was the imperial lawyer, Johannes Leo. It seems that the two felt more than just feelings of mutual respect, and in 1603 they were married, a wedding that was accompanied by a string of Latin poetic tributes from their friends, one of which heaps praise on Leo and his lioness. In the next few years, Elizabeth combined work and family. One tribute says that she was equally apt in producing books and babies. Indeed, she had a total of 7 children, 4 boys, all of whom died in infancy, and 3 girls. But childbearing was a dangerous business in those days, and Elizabeth died in 1612 at the early age of 31. Her poetry lives on.
She's extremely readable nowadays, because not least because of the sheer scope and compass of her work. For one thing, of course, Latin was used not just for stilted proclamations on official occasions, but within the family she writes some charming letters to her brother when he was a student, all in Latin, teasing him, telling him not to be too fond of playing his lute instead of getting on with his studies and so on. And this lightness and playfulness is carried over into much of her occasional verse. She writes for birthdays and other celebrations. She writes some lovely versions of Aesop's fables. She also writes devout, intense religious meditations, and she also writes moving tributes to her mother and her stepfather. So she shows how flexible and how powerful a language Latin can be for every kind of usage, from the ceremonial to the intimate and domestic.
For what is a mother? What is our parents' loss that the ceaseless tears of children teach us to know? And now, as I join them, I mourn my mother's sad fate, torn far away, alas, from my native land. Never again will she guide me with motherly words, no more be there when I say, Mother, give me advice. Never again will she bless all my children and me, making the sign of the cross on each forehead and breast. But God, by his valour, will save all my friends who remain, and death, my enemy, he will constrain your power. I pray that my children be safe and my husband may live. With courage I'll bear all fate brings, whatever it be. And if I should follow my mother when that hour should come, then with my death a new, better life will begin. So, mother of mine, truly honoured forever, farewell, and take these tears of mine as your final gift.
Possibly the fact that she's less well known than she should be is because Latin itself has gone in decline in so many schools. And yet she's in so many ways a very modern figure. She was able to earn her living, or at least support herself and her mother, by her initiative and her pen. And she's buried here in Prague, if you're interested. She's just down the road in St. Thomas's Church, where you can go and admire her tomb. So she certainly deserves to be much better known. And if she hasn't yet been the subject of a historical novel, I think she certainly ought to be.
If you'd like to read some more of Elizabeth Jane Weston's poetry in English, the collected writings, edited and translated by Donald Cheney and Brenda M. Hossington, were published by the University of Toronto Press in the year 2000. And special thanks to Susan Reynolds, who provided so much information about Elizabeth Jane Weston for this programme, and also made the excellent translations that we've been hearing. That's all we have time for today, but you can, of course, find this programme again in both text and audio on Radio Prague's website. That's www.radio.cz. And it's also available as a podcast. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here today, goodbye.